Have you been looking for a Taekwondo podcast with qualified people who know what they're talking about, who help you keep up with everything going on in the Taekwondo world? Well, you found it. This is the Taekwondo Podcast. Taekwondo news, competitions and other events, training and sports science, keeping the fans, coaches and high-performance athletes up to date with the latest news and trends on Olympic Taekwondo. Let's do this. This is the Taekwondo Podcast. And now your hosts, Coach Cesar Valentim and Peter Nessler.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of the Taekwondo Podcast. We're a podcast based out of Austria, in English language, for everyone out there who likes Taekwondo. The coaches, the athletes, sports scientists, the fans and the families. On this episode, we are reviewing 2021, the challenges and the surprises. Welcome to our second bonus episode. I'm Coach Cesar Valentim, and with me is Coach Peter Nessler. Hello, Peter. How are you? How is 22 going for you so far?
Thank you, Coach Cesar. I'm fine. 2022, we have some, a revival of the Taekwondo events. You could see in the calendar that it's more full than ever. 2021 was, of course, a very difficult year. We could see, due to the COVID crisis, that many events got cancelled, some even twice, like Austrian Open. It was a very difficult year for everybody because you could not tell if an event will happen or not and under which safety measurements. 2022 is a little better. We could see that some events were focusing on Eastern Europe, like in Kyurugi sector, we had a lot of championships in Bulgaria. This year it's more spread out. That's better for the whole Taekwondo circus. But still we have some restrictions due to COVID regarding the traveling and also in some countries the training get closed, the facilities every now and then. So it stays a little difficult, but the top teams have learned to manage the crisis, in my opinion. And I think we could face quite a normal situation in 2022. Also, in the bubbles we have during the events. But I think for the top events, it's quite normal. We should talk about, in my opinion, about 21, about the big events we had there. We had a postponed Olympics. We had some big tournaments in Taekwondo sector. And we had some special cases I think we should talk about.
Yes, last year, as you mentioned, most of the events were in Bulgaria. It started off the big competitions with Sofia Open in a week after that, the Turkish Open. Again, big corona cluster. A lot of people had to stay longer than they predicted and to complete the quarantine before they travel back to their countries. The second is, then it was a small event in Spain. And then again, back to Sofia Open for European multi-games. Everyone was there. A lot of the teams were competing and training in Europe. The teams with a little more financial background were able to move to Europe and stay here for a few months. I'm talking from South American teams all the way to East Asian teams that were here. Of course, the Oceania was a little bit locked. They were not able to travel anywhere. But in Europe, at least things looked a little bit normal. And then they didn't. We had the Olympic qualification again in Sofia with a big event, a lot of countries competing. But it stopped until between the qualification tournament and until the Olympic Games. Most of the events had to be canceled, postponed to the second semester, and we know that didn't happen. Training was most of the time not even possible. So those events were quite unfair for some of the teams that were not able to train. Or if they were not able to train, they had COVID quite prior or quite in the weeks before the qualification events. Some of them even got COVID when they were already in Tokyo. So the training possibility was, in my opinion, the second biggest factor for the Taekwondo to be so impaired during the 2021. How was it for you? Were you able to train? How was the situation in your club?
Well, in Austria, it was a mixed again. For a few weeks, we're allowed to train like quite like normal. Then we only had training for the top guys. So it was a little difficult to arrange because you have to collect all the data. You have set up the new schedules. So everybody has to be flexible, not only the coaches, but also the athletes, maybe if it's juniors or cadets for the parents. So it's ambitious to keep up the good spirit and the good work in Taekwondo when you have a change of measures every few weeks. But it's better now that we have the vaccination, you have the booster shots available here in Austria on a broad basis. And maybe we don't have another lockdown. We don't know for sure now, but I hope so. We could keep the facilities open and train almost normal.
Going back to 2021, the vaccinations were not yet quite spread. They were also not mandatory for traveling. Were you able to actually go somewhere else, or do you have to reduce your participation in competitions? And I know that you are very active, not only in Kyurugi, but also in the Pumse. Apart, you are one of the best referees in Pumse in Europe, and you've been very active in the past. Did you move to online during those times?
Well, at first, when the COVID crisis spread in March 2020, I thought there will be no more championships for a longer time. Usually, I'm refereeing about 20 championships a year as an international referee. And after 21, I noticed, also 2020, I noticed that it's the same amount and even a little bit more. So we didn't travel, that's true. There was only the last one I had was 2020 President's Cup in Helsingborg in Sweden. And the first one in 21 was the European Championships in Portugal, 21 in November. So more than 1.5 years in between. But this one was packed full of online championships. The people started to like it. There were participations of more than 1,000 competitors per championship. It went really big. But it also is reduced now because it's too many championships. And we also start to have the live championships back. So less traveling, that's true. If there was traveling, it was a little more complicated with all the certificates and vaccination and tests and whatever. But you could arrange, it's no problem. And at the championships, depending in which countries, some did it really good, some, well, not so good. You could see that if you arrange it properly, it's no problem to do so also in COVID times.
Yes, we had the biggest event, was I think the multi-games. And even before that, we had the Sofia Open. It was obvious that it was too many people at the same time. The competitions had to be a little bit spread out. I think World Taekwondo was very, very wise in doing the decision of separating the G tournaments and at least not having them on the same day or coinciding days with the juniors and the cadets, because we were seeing too little events on the calendar. That means the big and active teams would go to as many events as possible. And if there's only 3 or 4 events, you have to compact what you would expect from 20 competitions, or at least clubs that would not go to this or that one have to go to the competition that exists in order to keep your athletes scoring for the rankings. There's for the kids, there's a ranking, of course, for the world and Olympic ranking athletes. And having everyone and more than 1,000 people during a corona times in the same hotel was getting a little bit risky. So they made a very smart decision of separating them. The organizers of the events are not beginners. They know how to do the stuff. So they started spreading the events through longer and longer time spans. Of course, it increases the expenses for the teams, especially for the coaches, because the athletes can go and come back after their competition day. But the coaches and the support staff, doctors, physiotherapists, they actually have to stay there longer. The referees have to spend 6, 7, 8 days in a competition instead of the normal 2, 3 days. And of course, the costs involved with all this traveling, the days you are not at home and you have to find replacements for your job. Even if your job is Taekwondo, you're not there in your school. Someone has to give your classes. It was Taekwondo became a little bit more expensive, but on the other hand, we were one of the few combat sports that were actually able to continue. I've seen many other sports, even soccer had its hiatus. It had to stop. So when we're talking about the big sports, when you talk about the border, very small sport like ours, I'm actually quite happy we were able to compete. And the officials out there managed to bring some interesting competition formats. And talking about interesting competition formats, we had in the late second semester last year the first Women's World Open Championships hosted by Saudi Arabia. It was an event that was quite open. People were there from all over the world. Actually, one of the first teams to register was Israel to an event in Saudi Arabia. That means Taekwondo actually has the possibility of uniting people. But at the same time, these new competition formats bring some not only opportunities, but also some challenges. What are your opinions on the events like this?
Well, on the first hand, it's important to have as many formats as possible to get a broad participation of athletes and coaches all over the world. On the other hand, you have to manage all these things. So if you're a club willing to take part in all these events, you have to set up almost a separate department to arrange all these things. So it's getting more and more work, but those who keep being professional did a fantastic job, not only from the teams, also from the organizers. Not to forget the Olympics, which was, from the part of Taekwondo I could speak, was very well organized, and also the other life events we had. So we will see future more formats. Like we had the female, the women's event. They have the juniors, they have the under 21, they have all kinds of formats they want to develop. And maybe some of them is only trying what happens, but I'm quite positive about all these things that they will help us develop Taekwondo.
This podcast is supported by Hocken Dynamics. Hocken Dynamics believes that technology is most useful when it stays out of your way. That's why Hocken developed the world's first wireless force plate system with extreme usability. It is the quickest, easiest to use, and most robust solution on the market. It is trusted by all sports organizations, large and small, as well as tactical, military, and rehabilitation environments around the globe. It's force testing in the palm of your hand. Here at Vintekondo Center, we use Hocken Dynamics to test and monitor our team. The cloud-based platform allows us to access data and publish a variety of reports on the go. My favorites are trend reports and, of course, weight reports, where I can monitor different metrics to view progress and identify performance indicators, or to compare weights to a baseline data range. I use it on a daily basis to identify readiness. A simple jumping test takes me less than a minute to assess the entire team. Having my own Hocken Dynamics force plates allows me to test reactive strengths, maximum strengths, rate of force development, asymmetry, and so much more. The real-time feedback on the app is useful, not only for testing, but as a training tool, making it more accurate and at the same time more engaging for the athletes. If you are interested in learning more about Hocken Dynamics or getting your own, the team can be reached at info@hockendynamics.com or on Instagram or Twitter @HockenDynamics.
You're listening to the Taekwondo Podcast. Now back to your hosts, Coach Cesar Valentim and Peter Nessler.
Let's talk about the Olympics 2021. Of course, we could not continue talking about 2021 without talking about the Olympics. I would start actually with we're talking about COVID. We'll talk about what happened to Reshmiyo Uging. It was quite a surprising moment, quite an emotional moment if you followed her Instagram. Was it expected? Do you really, would you see any other solution for the Olympics except quarantining the athlete? Would you accept like a last minute replacement from the national team or even a wild card in the last minute?
Speaking from the viewpoint of teams, of athletes, of coaches, I would love to have that. But I also understand that it's, especially in times like the COVID times, very difficult to arrange things like that. So you have to have an understanding for the organizers as well. For the athletes, it would have been really great to nominate the next one in the list, for sure. But I also, I mean, it was fun to see Reshmi having fun in her room in Tokyo. So we would have missed it.
Yes, well, it's definitely a moment that will stay in history. The Olympics had a lot of actually historical moments. We had some surprises. We had we'll go through all the different weight divisions and the medalists, but also about the ones who didn't medal. I will start, of course, with the biggest surprise of the event for those who didn't know her, those who have been following her for quite a few years, like you and I, already expected something like that. Is of course not the winner, but the silver medalist from the 49 weight division, Adriana Cerezo. She was an amazing athlete coming out of Spain from the international Uncook International School from Jesús Ramal and Suvi Mikkonen. She managed to get all the way a junior career with a lot of success, a European junior champion under 21 Olympic weight divisions. And then she managed to qualify via Olympic qualification tournament by European qualification tournament. Then she went to the Olympics and she did an amazing journey. She went it positively with her mindfulness and her happiness and her state of dedication, but at the same time focus during the matches, starting with the big surprise. She eliminated China, she eliminated Serbia, and all the way to lose in the last 8 seconds to Panipak Wong Patanaki, then in a very, very emotional match. And it was a pleasure. It was actually one of the best moments I've seen in Taekwondo history, because it promoted our sport as an aggressive combat sport, but at the same time, a friendly and professional sport. The fact that if you followed her Instagram before the Olympic the day, she had something like 3,000 or 5,000 followers, and almost 100,000 under the first 24 hours. She was not only an inspiration for the sport, but also for every other sport. What do you, looking back at the 49s and Adriana and Panipak, Bogdanovic, there's a few more surprises like Avishag Sandberg from Israel. You remember that day? What was your opinion? What is your opinion on the 49s?
The 49 was, as you said, a mixture of some surprises for those who did not know Adriana and her coach. Well, her coach is well known, but the work between them before. But the two of us were following Adriana and Jesús for, and also Suvi for a long time. So we know, and we also saw it in the curriculum vitae that, well, winning junior championships. It was clear for me that she would reach at least the semifinals at the Olympics.
I think maybe the big surprise was since the 2020 World Championships were cancelled, she didn't have the opportunity to showcase the World Championships, and that got some of the seniors by surprise.
Yeah, that's true. So if you had a glimpse on the past, you could have seen that she's on a very good path, and she showed it perfectly, to, in my opinion. It was fantastic on a sports basis to see an athlete come in smiling and changing to a very high level of focus afterwards when she was on the mat. And the matches, of course, were brilliant, very exercising final against Thailand. And so it was really nice. The only little surprise for me was Avishag from Israel, but she was also training very well in the last months in her preparation. So no big surprises. Panipak missed out on the big success in the Olympics before. That happens. I mean, Tichana back in 49, also very nice to see. So, strong category.
Well, the 57 was not only surprising from the victories, but also from the ones who didn't win thereabouts. Again, Anastasia Zolotic, good friends of ours, good friend. She's been here in Austria training with us. We've been training with her. Talented athlete, junior world champion, silver medalist by the Youth Olympics. It was expected for her to be actually in the top position. We've seen her winning against Jade Jones at the Grand Prix events. The final against Tatiana Mnina was actually very exciting, very nerve-wracking, nail-biting match. That's Before we get to the finals, the day started with the biggest and most interesting surprises when we have Kimi Alizadeh, refugee team Europe, all the Iranian national team silver Olympic medalist coming all the way on the refugee program to the Olympics, eliminating Iran on the first match, and surprisingly winning against the favorite Jade Jones on the second match. That was probably the biggest surprise of the day. Even more disappointing when she lost the third bout and didn't get a chance of a repêchage for Jade, eliminating her completely from what would be what she announced many times as her third gold Olympic medal. So 57, definitely a second day that was not so easy, and a lot of nail biting, a lot of nerve wracking moments. And congratulations to Anastasia Zolotic, also to her coach Garrett Brown, not forgetting her passway, Dennis White and all her team before in Florida. They did manage to come all the way from different injuries. We remember that she went into the Youth Olympics with a broken hand and still made the final. But she had other problems throughout the career. She moved to a different city, and then she came all the way to Tokyo to bring the gold medal. But there's also other good results. Hatice Kubra Ilgun, she was a very good result for Turkey. Someone that is always there on the top, and it was a surprising medal. 57. What is your opinion on the 57, Peter?
Well, the 57 was full of surprises, as you said. Jade Jones dropping out very early and not getting the chance to get back out. That was rather disappointing, not only for her, but for many followers. But on the other hand, Anastasia is a very young, very motivated, very well-trained athlete, and she has a great backup from her team, perfectly planned everything. So that comes. And just to tell the people, you cannot construct a gold medal in Olympics. So sometimes there is surprises, sometimes there is not. 57 was full of surprises, that's true.
The 67s were, well, pretty much what we expected, except for the final. That was an exciting, again, one of the most beautiful matches we could see against between Mateja Jelic and Lauren Williams. It was right there, the two favorites meeting each other in the final, so no big surprise there. Ruth Gabi also on the podium position, so is Hadaya Malak. So the podium was pretty well the favorites. The fight between Mateja Jelic and Lauren Williams was, in your case, it was what you expected? You would expect Lauren Williams not to get the gold medal?
Lauren Williams is always very dedicated. When you see her fighting in her matches, especially in the important matches. But on the other hand, Mateja has a great experience from the past. So it's always the form of the day which depends. In that case, it was okay for me. It was still very exercising to watch, especially all the female matches at the Olympics, maybe all the finals at the Olympics. And in that case, both would have been okay for me to win. It was this time, or last year it was Mateja, so congrats. That was okay.
It does come all to the day, how you are that day. I remember maybe 2012 when Sebastian Krysmanik won the gold in minus 80. That was a big surprise. That was his day. He was definitely the underdog one of the underdogs on that tournament, and he came out superior. It was his day. We talked about the 49s. Maybe it was not Adriana's day. It was the Panipak's day. She got her gold. She was preparing for that. In the 67, it could go either way. It was really a coin throw. It could be a coin toss away from one or the other. And it was very, very close match. The final was then an interesting comeback from a historical veteran, the first gold medalist from Serbia since ex-Yugoslavia, right? Coming back again 9 years later to the podium against Korea, leaving athletes like Lauren or Bianca Walden in the third position. It definitely a final last day. Of course, a great day for Serbia. It was the second gold for Milica, but it was also the second medal in Tokyo for Serbian and for Galeb, Dragan Jović. So definitely a successful day for Serbia. The match is women heavyweight. We cannot count on so much exciting matches. But we have, of course, the podium positions. They are strong. We're talking about Bianca Walden, Queen Bee, her nickname, right? Milica Mandic, Lauren, and Li Debin. They are great athletes, but it's a division you wouldn't expect so someone that's not so young like Melissa to actually be able to do all those matches and come out with such endurance and such powerful in the final match.
Yeah, that's true. That was, for me, the biggest surprise, that Milica was able to once again have this place on the first place on the podium in a not too big but very strong group, because there is very big groups like the other weight classes, and the heavyweight is always a little smaller, but at the Olympics these are very good athletes, all of them who are on the podium now. So you just told it, Milica, Li Debin, Altea and Bianca Walkden. Maybe I was surprised that Bianca Walkden was not in the finals, but once again, this was the day it happened.
Yeah, it would be also the day for Reshmi Yungik if she wasn't in her hotel room in the Athletes Village, in Olympic Village, in quarantine. It would be her second Olympics, a chance to enjoy what would be the last Olympics in her career. She announced before that she would move into a coaching position before that. It didn't went as expected, but again, those are the moments we live in, and the COVID is something we have to be prepared that all these years and years and of training can be beaten by a little virus that is shows that it's sometimes what you cannot see that takes you out of the way. I'll let you maybe talk a little bit about the male division.
Yeah, coming to the male divisions, for me, there was one division which had the winner, it was programmed before. It was the minus 80 with Maxim Kramchov, but in maybe all the other cases, you could speak about a surprise. Let's start at the flyweights, minus 58. Italy again on the first place with Vito Dell'Aquila. Very nice path through the full event. So very nice matches, very focused, dedicated. So when you just saw the matches, it was okay. When you're looking into the past, maybe there could be some other winners, but congrats to Vito. Very nice thing to do. You had Mohamed Khalil Jendoubi from Tunisia, which is also maybe a little surprised that he was in the finals and got silver. Only bronze for South Korea again, and Russia grabbing a second bronze, Mikhail Artamonov. What do you think about the lightweights?
The when the flyweight started, it started me, of course, being Portuguese, I was glued to the TV screen because I had a competitor in that division, and it was surprising to see the match with Spain. Seeing Spain lose in the second match was, of course, a little bit disappointing. Again, the same situation with Jay Jones. It means that Bragança could not move all the way to the finals, or at least to the bronze medal repêchage. The rest of the event, Vito was known. He was known, but he was not someone you would call a favorite. Korea, of course, and Russia would be there on the top. I've seen the Mohamed Khalil also very developing since his early age. Egypt is, Tunisia is a strong team, and we knew he would be one of the favorites. But we always counted Africa being not the Northern Africa not as being the strongest, at least not in male, with the exception of Egypt. And being into the final with Vito was, again, Vito had a day. Vito had his day. It was really good. And we know that even though his techniques are not the most fantastic or not the most acrobatic when we look at the 58s, it was actually very interesting to see his precision and how he managed to very accurate, with a lot of accuracy, very accurate techniques, get all the way to the gold medal. So, and what about the featherweight?
The featherweight is 68. When you look at the podium, you have the winner with Uzbekistan, historic goal with Ulukbek Rashitov. On second place, we have Bradley Sinden from Great Britain. Grabbing silver, you have the two bronzes with Hakan Rechber from Turkey and Zhao Shuai from China. So we know the names. Maybe it's a little surprise how they are mixed. Sinden was one of the favorites, clearly. He was in the final once again. It was a brilliant match against Rashitov, and the winner was the one who had more points. So in that case, I mean, it switches from second to second. So you could have seen like in the 49 female was switching one on top, then the other one. So the longer it takes, then you have a different winner. And this time it was Rashitov. No big surprises, but maybe little surprises in the current positions. What do you think about the 68s?
The final was definitely a little bit like a basketball match over there. I score, you score, and it was an interesting amount. About, of course, Ulubek was for me the a big surprise. I was seeing Bradley Sinden going old, increasing his performance, and I would assume that his training plan would put him in peak performance on that day. It was an emotional and historical moment for Uzbekistan, and probably a little short for Bradley and for the great GB team. Hakan in the third place was surprising how he actually managed to knock out, but technical elimination of the Brazilian player by hitting him on the side. He would not be able to see him come. And it was the way he eliminates number one in the ranking to move forward shows that, surprisingly, because usually the Turkish team is more on the 1-to-1 player, that they did very decisive to training. And it's important also this ranking system to know you're going to, months in advance, who you're going to face in the Olympics. And they did their homework, and it was congratulations for them. China again falling short from the gold medal, one of the big and tallest athletes in the division, actually not being able to go to the final must have been probably a miscalculation on the planning, on the preparation, or again Uzbekistan and England were having better days and they managed to get all the way to the gold and silver.
Yeah, coming to the minus 80, for me, the minus 80 male is the result was the less surprising. So Maxim Kamcho for me is the most sophisticated athlete, the most talented athlete for me in the minus 80 currently. And he was the winner. He was a clear winner through all his matches. Salih Al-Sharabati from Jordan, really nice athlete, good technique. He showed good matches. So second place should be okay. For me, a little surprise was Tony Kanait from Croatia getting the bronze. But at the Olympics, he showed that he deserves it. And we all know Saif Issa from Egypt, very well-trained athlete, good experience. So no big surprises in the minus 80 for me.
Indeed, Maxim has a huge fan base. He's very well known. He's an amazing competitor. The male fan base, for probably different reasons than the female fan base, but it indeed was not a big surprise winner. Yes, Croatia getting here getting two medals, it was obviously a big surprise. We know Tony. We know he's an athlete that has a big developing career. Coming to a bronze medal at the Olympics was definitely a good day for them.
Last one is the heavyweights. Also not big surprises, but as I was talking before in the minus 68, it could have been a different setting, with Vladislav Larin from Russia again winning the gold medal. There is not a single favorite for me in the heavyweight male, but he was one of them, so it was quite okay. A surprise again, Dejan Georgievski from North Macedonia, getting through to the finals and grabbing silver in a nice match against Ladislav was a little surprise, and also exercising, really nice finals. We had South Korea and Cuba in the bronze medals, with South Korea in Kyudon, not really surprised that he's on a podium, but Rafael Alba, this again was one of the stories from Olympia.
Yeah, I would actually, we keep saying Russia, it's not Russia, it's the Russian Olympic Committee flag. They are not allowed to compete with their national flag, but we all know the difference is not that much. Korea, definitely disappointing for them. They were... for the first time since taekwondo is in the Olympics, that they didn't get a gold medal. Was the same also with Iran, had got zero medals at this event. So the big turnaround in the taekwondo, this was actually a historical moment, because it shows that all the other countries are catching up with the big powerhouses. Also with Great Britain not getting more than more medals, even though they were aiming at least two or three golds. So... Rafael Alba. Yes, Rafael Alba, like the Cubans, they don't go out too much, but when they go in strength. And Rafael Alba is a notorical athlete. He is one of the strongest, definitely, in my opinion, one of the toughest players in his weight division. He's strong, he's tall, he's smart, he's has great resources. Surprisingly, Dejan and Vladislav went to the final with clear superiority to their opponents into making it all the way to the top two positions in the podium. This was 2021 was an interesting Olympic game because it was also the first games that karate was first and only that they were sharing a little bit of the spotlight in terms of combat sports. But the fact that we had all this technology, the 4D cameras, and also some very exciting moments, not that the clear decisions on the superiority or the victories, didn't happen with other sports. Here it was very clear. In these Olympics, we even had people sharing gold medals in the same discipline. In taekwondo, it was very clear. It was a very smooth Olympics. There was no problematics in terms of technology, no problematics in terms of refereeing. It was, of course, very fair medal distribution. And I think it brings the sport to a different level. It definitely puts the sport in the spotlight of many national Olympic committees, and allowing a lot more countries to have more funding and to develop the sport even more, creating even stronger events. So... thank you, Peter. It was a pleasure being here with you and with everyone who is listening. This was the second bonus episode from our Taekwondo podcast. If you haven't already listened to the first one, that is also available online. We are releasing new episodes every Tuesday, and the first episode is already out there. Stay tuned. Subscribe to the podcast, leave us a positive review, and share it with your friends. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Taekwondo Podcast, keeping the fans, coaches, and high-performance athletes up to date with the latest news and trends on Olympic Taekwondo. Your host, Coach Cesar Valentim, has almost 20 years of experience with high-performance Taekwondo and has worked all around the world as a Taekwondo trainer. Peter Nessler has been teaching Taekwondo for more than 20 years, and he's currently one of the top referees in Europe. We hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on Instagram at Taekwondo Podcast, on Facebook at Taekwondo Cast, and the website taekwondopodcast.com. See you next time.